Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. The student debt, you know, those loans that you take out during college to help pay for your tuition, other college expenses, do they affect more than the student? We're going to talk about student debt today on Faith and Family. Hope you can stick around for the conversation. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. You'll find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, and all the great work they're doing. Joining me in studio today, we have Larry Kroom. He's the LCF Lutheran Church Extension Fund Vice President for National Lending. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being our guest here in studio and being our guest on Faith and Family.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here.
It was a long trip across the highway, huh?
It took me all of 3 to 4 minutes to get here.
Well, it's nice to be here so close to Lutheran Church Extension Fund. What a great resource, and to have all the knowledge that and the experience that's packed into that building over there. And I know LCEF has staff around the country as well, but great to be here next to the, I guess, the national headquarters, if you will, to be able to tap into all the knowledge that you all have there. Tell us a little bit about your work as the Vice President for National Lending.
Sure. In my role as Vice President for National Lending, we provide the loans to organizations that are associated with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, those being the eligible borrowers. And that would include loans to high schools, social service agencies. In addition to that, the National Lending area also oversees the loans to our rostered church workers, our rostered church worker loan program.
Very good. Also joining us by phone today, Randy Boehm. He's with Education Solution Partners. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being our guest today, and looking forward to talking with you about student debt. Not usually everyone's excited about talking about student debt, but we have two eager guests today ready to talk about student debt. Randy, tell us about your work with Education Solution Partners.
Sure. Education Solution Partners was created 5 years ago. Manage student loan programs for others. So on an outsourced basis, we run the student loan programs for them. Personal background, I've been involved in student loans since 1990, running them for KeyBank, and then a few years ago starting this company up.
Well, very good. Well, we've got the pros in-house today to talk about student debt. Larry, tell us about your involvement. How is it that you're familiar with the cost of higher education in the U.S. and student debt, student loans?
Well, in addition to having a son that's enrolled in college,
firsthand experience.
Exactly. I know that he's not in an Ivy League school, and yet that cost is staggering. But in my professional role, serving with the Rostered Church Worker Loan Program, we see a number of applications throughout the year and conducted surveys, which we'll get into in a little bit. So it's a daily piece of my life.
And Randy, what is it that drew you to this work with Education Solution Partners? What is it that drew you to assisting with the cost of higher education for students and for colleges?
You know, it's actually kind of hard for me to figure out why I went this direction, but having gotten into this direction, I've been involved in not just student loans, but education in general. And it's kind of ironic because that's not my background, but I have been the past president for the Cleveland Lutheran High School Association. I'm involved with one of the local grade schools. I sit on the board of a company in Massachusetts that helps with student loans. So it's just been kind of my career has all been around education, but more the financing side than anything else.
Okay, so you say that that's not necessarily your background. What is your background then?
Yeah, I have an MBA in statistics, actually, but I went to work for a bank, and through the years ended up overrunning the student loan area for KeyBank. And that's really where I got into the student loan business, per se. But I've always been involved in education, helping schools in one way or another.
Along the way, what is it that you learned about student loans and the cost of higher education in your previous career that you found intriguing?
Well, first thing I would put out there is that when you're looking for a school, so starting there, you got to plan for it. You got to think about it. You got to think about where you're going to be when you come out. But that being said, work with the school. If there is a school that's a perfect fit for you or your family, they'll work with you as well if it's a fit for them. And work through that process on the front end. Understand how you're going to be paying for this schooling. Make sure you know exactly what you're getting into.
Larry, what prompted your investigation of student debt in the U.S., and particularly in your case with LCEF among church workers?
Right. LCEF has supported the LCMS and its church workers for a number of years. We've offered consolidation loan programs to church workers for several years, as well as the mortgage loans. Since the program's inception, we've received applications from over 6,000 pastors and teachers across the Synod. And over time, we have observed that the amount of debt for rostered church workers coming out of their formal education has increased, sometimes significantly so. So in response to that, we developed a loan program to consolidate public and private education mm-hmm. debt at below market rates. It was originally only available to pastors, but just this month we've expanded that to be available to all rostered church workers in the Synod.
Oh, very good. That's good to know. Where can I find that form?
You can visit LCEF's website.
LCEF.org. Well, and that's valuable to know, being a church worker who obviously went through Concordia University to prepare to become a church worker. There certainly is a cost that's associated with that. It's a fair cost, but for many of us, that involves student loans and student debt, and which is why this topic is, I think, why it's important to me, and I think many people who are listening today, is understanding, understanding the student debt, but also finding resources and help for making sure that we're responsible with that student debt.
Absolutely, and what we have learned about student debt, in particular with our church workers, is that even though it's not quite as evident among commissioned ministers, which is our teachers, student debt in general, it's alarmingly high. Since our pastors mm-hmm. are earning the equivalent of a master's or a doctorate degree, that translates to 7 or 8 years of more schooling. And add to that, many of our seminary students, they're married with families to support. That drives up their financial needs significantly so.
And typically in North American culture, when someone attends, earns a bachelor's degree and then goes on for graduate studies, 7, 8 years of college in all, and that being part of that being graduate studies, you know, the cost of education can really add up. But in most professions, they're going to go on to a profession that's going to be probably a profession that's paying pretty significantly.
Right. I think the primary difference, as you said, is the career path that they've been called to.
Mm-hmm.
Church work in general is not a high paying profession.
We're not going into it for the money.
Exactly. So how does somebody pay for 50, 75, even 100,000 or more in student loan debt once they complete
sure.
their education? Add to that a mortgage, a car, mm-hmm. and other necessities of life.
Randy, you sound like you have something to add to that.
I do. And just by way of background, my son is a minister. So I know firsthand as well, from a personal standpoint, what this means. But actually, having been in this business, we kind of went through this and figured out how we were going to do this. And there are a couple of programs that people need to be aware of on the federal student loan side. First one is income-based repayment. The income-based repayment program, very few people that are eligible for it actually take advantage of it. And the way this one works is the amount of your payment is limited to 15% of the amount that your adjusted gross income on an annual basis exceeds 150% of the poverty line. Now, I hate the word poverty line, but that's the federal rule that's out there. But we recognize where our pastors come out, where our teachers come out, and what they're paid. And you start to see people that definitely qualify. Particularly, it takes into account the size of the family. you know, my son going through the seminary, seminary 4 years, $100,000 it will cost to go through there. And coming out with that debt, we knew what he was going to be making, put him into this program, and it extends your life. Recognize that. You're going to pay that loan for a long period of time. At the end of 25 years, whatever's left is forgiven. There's a tax consequence to that. So there's some issues with doing this. But the second piece, the second part, or the second program that you add to this, called Public Service Loan Forgiveness, which is available to anybody working in a 501c3 organization or in any government job, which generally our church workers qualify in those regards. At the end of 10 years, any amount that's remaining on your loan is forgiven, and that is not a taxable event either. So in my son's scenario, he's basically paying back the equivalent of a $20,000 to $25,000 loan, and at the end of 10 years, whatever's left is just going to be forgiven by the Department of Education.
So how would someone go about finding out information for those types of repayment plans?
That's the spot that's just not done well. Mm-hmm. You know, I once printed out all of the different repayment plans and options that you have on federal loans, and it's an inch and a half thick, just summaries of them. The best places that I have seen to go to, one is called IBRinfo.org, which explains the income-based repayment and public service loan forgiveness. And then the other place that I would send people is to an organization called American Student Assistance, and the website is saltmoney.org. They are a nonprofit organization. Their sole purpose is to help people figure out how to repay their loans. There's no charge to the borrowers. It's all done by support from other organizations. It's a great resource. Online, call people. The organization does a great job.
Well, two great resources for our listeners to check out that if they're looking at facing student debt. I would imagine many of my classmates, if they're listening, are going to check those out right now. Larry, what did you learn in that study? What did you learn about student debt for church workers specifically? I know you mentioned some of those statistics or some of those numbers earlier. Was there anything that really stood out for you when it comes to church workers and debt, student debt?
Yeah, I think what really struck me was that we have conducted multiple surveys mm-hmm. throughout the years, and in our most recent survey, we found, number one, that the results did not change significantly from previous surveys, but probably the one thing that sticks out with me and causes me great concern is that an astounding 29% of the respondents, they rated their discomfort with their debt level in either the high, the very high, or the extreme categories. And then of the 16% that fell into the very high and extreme categories indicated that they have personally experienced stress and it has negatively impacted their ministry and their personal life. That can take a toll and potentially cause the church to mm-hmm. lose some very valued ministry servants.
So it sounds like, is there a common scenario, it sounds like?
This mostly, it impacts, as Randy attested to, from the seminary debt because of those mm-hmm. extra years of education. And depending on their call, mm-hmm. Then of course you're living within an economy that
sure.
you simply don't have a great deal of control over.
Now, I know we've been talking about church workers and the student debt that they incur. Randy, looking at the big picture as a whole, not just church workers, is there a common scenario for college grads today?
Yes, there is. And that, you know, Larry's comments I could echo, you know, just generally across the economy too. And I actually came across a couple of good studies that were just completed in the last few weeks. One is by Citizens Financial Group. It's an interesting one because they surveyed students in school, and then they also surveyed former college students, so people who've come out of school. Same type of information, but you find interesting things in there, like one of the questions is, college is a necessity no matter how much it costs. 74% of the students said that's true. 59% of the people who'd left school said that was true. You see a big learning curve in school, but to relate specifically to what we're talking about here is the question that talks about, I would have considered not going to college had I known the impact student loans would have on my life. 47% of the people who are out of school agreed with that statement, the impact that student loans had on their life after college.
That's pretty interesting. That's significant, because that, what does that say about the value of their degree then as well? Does that imply that their degree does not necessarily their degree has less impact on their life choices than the student debt?
Yeah. That's really kind of what it's saying. You know, I wished I had planned better to manage my student loan debt. 77% of the people out of school said that.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't plan, and then they'd list all kinds of things that they're doing differently in their life. The other study I was going to mention is one that's done by an organization called John Burns Real Estate Consultants, and it gets into the housing side. And new rules were put in place for the mortgage market January of this year. A big factor of that is your debt-to-income ratio. Here's the point that this survey made. For every $250 of student loan payment per month, that reduces the amount they can borrow about $44,000. Now, average student loan debt is just under $30,000. My rule of thumb is that your payment is generally about 1% of whatever your debt is, so that's a $300 a month payment. So if you're just an average student loan, your average borrower, the amount of housing that you could afford is $45,000 less because of that student loan and the way it impacts the calculations. It's just the numbers and the way that they work out. Reduction in what they can borrow.
That's pretty significant.
And if you're talking people that have borrowed $50,000, $70,000, this survey went on that if their monthly payment is $750, they probably won't get a mortgage at all. Again, under the new rules that went into effect at the beginning of this year.
And looking at that in terms of the big picture, then, I mean, what percentage of the population is this? What percentage of the population has student loans that that would affect them, that would prevent them from purchasing a home?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because in the article it addresses that. 22% of the 30-year-olds would have hit that, been at that level. So you're talking a significant piece here. Overall, the article real warning was that approximately $83 billion in mortgage sales will be impacted by student loans this year.
So then student debt doesn't just affect the person who's the student who's taken out the student loans.
No.
It affects everyone.
Yeah, it's had a tremendous drag on the economy, as Randy has indicated by the surveys, in addition to just the real estate sector. Having these staggering amounts of student loan debt may oftentimes push the individual into other forms of more costly debt, mm-hmm. in order to make ends meet, whether that be credit cards or personal loans. We see loans to family members, and for those Dave Ramsey listeners out there, they know that Thanksgiving dinner doesn't taste quite as good when you have debt to family members. So that adds additional stress to the whole family dynamics.
Why so high? Well, why such a significant effect of student debt on grads? You know, we're talking about, you know, in this case, we're talking about 30 somethings, which would be the most likely people who are going to be buying maybe their first home. And probably well into their career. You know, they've got a pretty good foothold in their career in their 30s, most likely, unless they've been in grad school for a really long time. Why is this so significant at this point in time? Is there a
a typical scenario that we're seeing? Is this, are these students who are going to college because they grew up in the generation that says everybody has to have a college degree and not just a bachelor's degree? Now you probably need to have a master's degree as well in order to get the really good job. And then what happens when they get out of college with that master's degree and all that student debt? What's happening?
I think what may have contributed to the increase in more recent years is the Great Recession that we went through in 2008, 2009, which pushed a lot of folks who were otherwise looking for employment into college. We know that enrollment increased over that period of time, and the residual impact of that is increase in debt, which then has spiked and caught the attention of even the highest levels of government in trying to find other ways, other means to address that. So that has probably been the greatest contributor to it. But taking that and the general increase in tuition across the board from university to university.
You know, it's almost like you can't pick one thing and say, oh, that's what it is. It's the combination of things. It's general economy, not, you know, poor job market, people coming out. It's new rules because of that bad economy and the issues with the mortgages. New rules that focus more on that debt-to-income ratio to qualify for a loan. And, you know, having been a banker and involved in the mortgage side, not just student loans, but involved in mortgages, a lot of times the student loan piece was almost ignored in the past in giving people mortgages because you knew that there were different options and things that they could do there. That's not the case anymore. It absolutely has to be included. It's a very strict formula. That side of it is coming in. The cost of education is coming in. The borrowing levels have increased year over year. You know, and it's not necessarily that education cost has gone up, which it has, but there's been cutbacks in state aid and other things that have been going on that have driven it into the tuition side and driven it to higher borrowing levels.
Do you think that the students who are graduating with a higher degrees, you know, with master's degrees rather than bachelor's degrees, because they were, you know, they went into college with high aspirations and they wanted to get the higher degree because that's what they've been encouraged to do, because they've been told if you get the master's degree, you're going to get the better job. You're going to be the one who gets the higher paying job. And then when they're graduating, they're finding that there aren't as many jobs available that require that master's degree and that are going to pay what they anticipated they would, you know, the salary that they would make as a college grad with a master's degree.
I would definitely say yes. Education has always been counter-cyclical. So when the economy isn't doing well, people go back to school, get additional education, or they go to advanced degrees, whatever it is. But generally, it's always been a problem in the short run. So the economy is bad for a couple of years. Well, while they're in school, the economy kind of rights itself and you come out. That didn't happen this time. It's been so long and so slow for any type of recovery that by the time they come out of school, it still hasn't recovered. And so, again, it just compounds on itself.
Larry, is that what you...
I would agree with that comment as well. And I think what exacerbates that among church worker once again is that unlike most degrees that you get a master's education or even a doctorate for a fairly decent wage coming out of school, it's not there in general in the church.
And I think what I've seen most or what I've read most is that these grads graduating from grad school, if they are employed, it's not a job that required a master's degree, maybe a bachelor's degree, maybe an associate's degree or a high school diploma at most. So it's not paying what they anticipated in order to begin making those repayment, you know, those repaying their loan.
Sure. And I believe I agree with you completely. What 20, 30 years ago required a bachelor's degree now in order to have that competitive advantage for the scarcity of jobs that are out there. A master's degree puts you on a little bit above your competitor.
As one who worked in higher education at the time, I was working in higher education at 2008, right about the time I had just actually started my career in higher ed at that time, right when the recession began, and I was actually in enrollment management. So I saw exactly what you were describing just a little bit ago, that huge influx of enrollment in 2008 because the economy was sinking, and so people were going back to school. They lost their jobs right here in St. Louis. A big factory, a big plant here in St. Louis closed, and so many of them were given incentives to many of the factory workers were given incentives to go back to school, and I was a part of helping enroll many of those students and go through that enrollment process, because that was the opportunity that was before them. Now, in that case, you know, I was working at a community college. Many of them were looking into career programs, so it only took them a year, 2 years maybe to go through those programs to go back out into the workforce. Those students don't necessarily accumulate as high of debt, most likely, in that 2 year program. And some of them had incentives that helped pay for those programs.
True, and a lot of that depends on the planning, as Randy mentioned, doing the homework, working with the institution, and making sure your financial house is in order before you make that plunge into the.
And I want to talk about that. I want to talk about having a plan when you're looking at colleges and making that plan for how you're going to pay for college. We'll talk about that when we come back from our break. Today, we are talking with Larry Kroom, LCEF Vice President for National Lending, and Randy Baim with Education Solution Partners. Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Recently, China celebrated the 34th anniversary of their brutal one-child population program. It's resulted in millions of forced abortions and sterilizations. One particularly cruel event was when they found out Mrs. Dong was 9 months along in her unauthorized pregnancy with twins. That didn't stop the local family planning office from literally dragging her to the nearby abortion mill. It took 10 people to hold her down as she fought for the lives of her babies, but they ultimately succeeded. History will someday show that Planned Parenthood quietly supported this barbaric program. For decades, they've proudly flown the pro-choice flag and yet have done nothing to protect and aid millions of women who are victimized, beaten, and often killed by forced abortion.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Jesus in the Bible exhorts us to agreement in all biblical teachings. I'm Rod Zwanitzer, one of the four hosts of Concord Matters, a show with that worthy goal, Concord, inviting you to join us Saturday mornings at 10 and repeated Tuesdays at 2 p.m., as well as 24/7 on demand.
Listen to Concord Matters on the Messenger of Good News, KFUO.
Three, 38, Protect yourself and those around you by getting your flu vaccine. It is your best defense against the flu. Annual vaccination against flu is recommended for all people 6 months of age and older, unless they have a condition or medical reason not to get the vaccine. Stay in the game, get vaccinated, and help us tackle the flu.
To find a flu vaccine clinic near you, go to mo.gov and click on the flu vaccine locator. This message is brought to you by the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
The world is the mission field of Worldwide KFUO. We bring the gospel of Christ to all nations. Worldwide KFUO reaches countries where missionaries on the ground can't go. Christ called us to proclaim the gospel to all nations, and that's what we do here every day at Worldwide KFUO. If our mission and worldwide outreach is important to you, would you please prayerfully consider supporting Worldwide KFUO at kfuo.org.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking about student debt. Our guests, Larry Krum, LCEF Vice President for National Lending, and Randy Boehm with Education Solution Partners. Before we went to break, we were talking about the impact of student debt and the whole college experience, earning a degree, and then those early years in the career. What does it look like with student debt? But let's back up in time, let's back up in that life cycle and go back to planning for college and planning for how to pay for college. Randy, where do we even begin with planning for how to pay for college?
Sure. I have, over the years, I've had a lot of parents come up to me because they know I'm in the student loan business and been involved in this. They'll come up to me when their kids are, you know, sophomores, juniors in high school and say, Randy, how did you do this? And I have to tell them it's too late because I started being into this business. I started when my boys were 3 and 4 years old mm-hmm. and starting to put money aside to help pay for college. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that there aren't ways to figure this out and make it work for you. First thing is, have a good feeling for where your son or daughter wants to go to college and needs to go to college. One of the big areas that causes the cost to go up, causes additional burdens of financial debt or whatever on the families, is when the student transfers schools, moves around a lot, loses credits, has to go longer, all those bad things happen from a financial standpoint. So the first thing I would stress to people is have a good idea of where you want to go with a career and then figure out the colleges that meet that criteria.
That's a good plan.
It saves you in the long run. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of transferring around.
Sure. And from time to time, yes, someone's going to change programs or maybe change colleges. But if you have a good solid plan and know what your intentions are, that doesn't mean that you can't be flexible and make some changes, but it reduces that stress if you do have a plan and you can stick with it. That makes sense.
Yeah, the reason for attending the college is because of the education. And if you can get past the glamour of the school and the other things that come with going to college, mm-hmm. and really understand, is it the right program? That will help a lot.
Sure. Okay, so having a good plan for what college and starting to think about that early, knowing what your students' needs are, what college is potentially going to be a good match. Now, granted, some may not know that until senior year of high school. Some may go to a community college for a couple of years before they figure out what university they want to study at, or maybe they decide that college, university, bachelor's degree isn't necessarily for them. They may find something else, another vocation along the way that's a better match for them.
And I think researching to see what type of free money is available, scholarship money is mm-hmm. available. There's a lot of it out there, and a lot of it that goes left unclaimed. So taking advantage of that and doing the homework, doing the research, also looking into work-study programs, things that remove all the bells and whistles from that whole sure. education experience, because those do come at a premium.
And the best sources for that type of information are your high school counselors, mm-hmm. who are helping you figure out where to go to school, what will work for you, and then at the school itself, the college, the financial aid office, and sure. working closely with them and discussing your goals and what you're trying to accomplish. They're the best resources, those two, to help you figure out how to finance.
So have a good plan and sticking with that plan of what college to attend, but also using the resources you have to plan for and find out support for college, such as scholarships and grants and financial aid.
Yeah, the loan programs should be at the bottom of the list. Mm-hmm. You know, the extent that you can get a grant, the extent that you can get money that is given to you that you do not have to repay, should be a priority going into school.
So understanding that grants and scholarships, understanding if there are any stipulations that come with those as well, I think would be important too, right?
Stipulations, but also, are you in a category that there are unique scholarships for, unique mm-hmm. grants for? That you're going into a certain program, that you're a certain background, all those things need to be explored. If you can narrow the pool down, don't expect the school just to give you some grant money because you want to attend there. There has to be a reason behind it.
Or simply because you're wonderful.
Yeah.
So looking for specifically for scholarships and grants at the institution and outside the institution as well. As you mentioned, Larry, there are all kinds of scholarships that go unused each year.
Right. There's public and private foundations and such that are actively looking for applications, and they go left wanting.
How do you go?
One source that's often overlooked is the employer of the parents. A lot of companies have their mm-hmm. scholarships for families of their employees.
How do you go about looking for legitimate scholarships, especially like those private or public scholarships that are available? How do you go about looking for those? You're a parent, so you know this.
I actively scoured the internet. Not that you're going to find the best of resources just by doing Google searches, mm-hmm. but as Randy mentioned, talking with the financial aid's office, talking specifically with the school that you have identified for that student or the student himself to take on that responsibility. Because they're, in addition to getting those initial scholarships, in order to receive them on an ongoing basis, there's a need to reapply mm-hmm. year after year after year. And then rather than waiting after year two and saying, where's the money? And the student failed to reapply for that. So there is a follow through. There's a tremendous responsibility, but it definitely is worth it in the long run to be diligent.
So when looking for scholarships, is there anything to avoid, any red flags that you should look out for when searching for scholarships? You said you were looking on the internet. I would imagine there are some scams out there as well.
No doubt. Anything that would require, and Randy, you might correct me if I'm wrong. Anything that would require you to pay money mm-hmm. to process an application, by all means, avoid those.
One site I would suggest is a site called FinAid. Financial Aid is what it stands for, but it's finaid.org. Mm-hmm. They do a pretty good job of all the front end. How do you figure out a school? How do you apply? How do you get financial aid? And they actually have links to various scholarship programs.
And I think one last alert out there that you should avoid anywhere you go is protecting your personally identifiable information, or your PII.
Sure, you want to protect that information. You don't want to just be putting that out on anything, on any application online. You want to make sure that it's a legitimate agency. You want to understand their privacy policy and things like that before you start putting that information online or wherever on a form.
Right. Every day we're seeing security breaches, and there's just no need to expose yourself to that additional problem.
So scholarships and working with the financial aid at the college or university is a good step, is another step. Grants. Some grants are grants may be available. There is, if I recall correctly, there's an important step to apply for grants, and that is the FAFSA. Every student, if applying for federal student aid, has to complete the FAFSA.
You sound like you're familiar with that.
Well, I will say that it is the process has improved. I gather you've had to do it in the last few years.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's improved over the last 20 years that it's been out, I believe. I remember filling out lots of papers.
I recall filling out a lot of papers myself, and there's only so many ways that you can say no, so then it doesn't take long to learn.
And now it can be done electronically, and I've found that even it's basically a form that's based on your tax returns for the previous year. And now if you file your tax returns electronically, there's an option to make that known in the form, the online FAFSA form, and it'll actually populate the information. It'll pull the information from your electronic tax returns, which is a whole lot easier.
Just makes the no answer that much quicker.
Right. So grants are another option. Randy, we've talked about having a good plan, knowing what college you're going to go to, using the resources at the college, using the high school counselor to help you find scholarships and grants and aid along the way. Any other steps after that?
Keep on top of it. Mm-hmm. That would be the other suggestion. It's not just getting into the school. Understand what you're working with, how it's going to affect you in the future. Have a plan then for, you know, if you're taking out loans, have a plan for the repayment end of it as well.
So having a clear plan.
Mm-hmm. And I think to that end, one thing we haven't touched on is we our conversation has swung to preparing and during mm-hmm. school, but then on the backside, what we need to address is the financial literacy. Mm-hmm. That is something that is often overlooked in our secondary schools and then post-secondary schools. Having that as a part of the core curriculum, I think, is critical. Both of our seminaries now have instituted financial literacy programs for incoming students into the seminary. So kudos to them for that.
And it's the incoming. That's so often it was left to when they're graduating. Wrong. You're too late at that point already.
Sure. I know in my case that, you know, in order to graduate, in order to exit, we had to attend a student loan information meeting on the way out. Now, granted, they had some information and education on the way in, you know, when applying for student loans, but it was more so information, the exit interviews, if you will.
Entrance counseling and exit counseling are actually requirements of the federal student loan program. So everybody has to go through that mm-hmm. To get the loan on the entrance side, and then the school is required to offer the exit counseling on the way out as well.
If I recall, and now granted this has been some time, in my case, I remember there being, I mean, they did a fine job of educating me on what I was signing up for, but there was probably more time spent on the exit counseling and informing me, you know, of the process of repayment. And they did a nice job of it. But at that point in time, I don't know, it would have been helpful to have a lot of that earlier on, too, I think, based on what you all have shared today.
Yeah. And I would, you know, the saltmoney.org site and the counselors that they offer. And again, it's all free advice for the borrowers, the students. I would suggest people, you know, head there and do that process as well. The other thing I would put out there is on the federal student loan side, there are so many repayment options, different ways that things can be done. I find it mind-boggling that anybody defaults on a federal student loan. There are just so many ways to prevent that. Most of it, though, is just that people don't know. The programs aren't out there. They're being publicized. People aren't familiar with how the process works. And as I point out to people, you know, I deal with this every day, but for most students and their families, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event. Can't expect the students and the families to understand all these rules and regulations around this stuff. It's not what they do every day.
Sure.
They need to go get that help and get that support.
Larry, you mentioned financial literacy. What are the key things that you would like college graduates to know when it comes to financial literacy? What are the things that you think we need to know when graduating from college, going into our first career?
I think if I had advice to give to the college graduate, it would be, if you haven't had the budget counseling, get the budget counseling. There's self-help, and Randy just gave a resource online. There's no reason for doing that. Our Rostered Church Worker Loan Program, by the way, for the consolidation loans and our repayment loan program, we do have a budget counseling component to that because we want to continue encouraging that good stewardship here in the church. But additional advice to the graduate would be, live within your means. Listen to your grandparents. They grew up in a tough generation, and what they say has a lot of validity today. Work a second job if you're able to, so that you can meet your financial obligations, and defer those extras until you can pay cash. Mm-hmm. We've become a society of instant gratification, and we don't necessarily need the iPhone 6 right now.
Good advice from Little House on the Prairie, right? Cash on the barrel, Pa always says.
Cash on the barrel.
Oh, man, it's so true, though. But, you know, paying cash for the things that we need and really evaluating whether or not you truly need something. You know, I have an iPhone, but it's like the old iPhone 4, and it works just fine.
It does work fine.
It does what I needed to do, and I didn't... I want to say I didn't have to pay for it, but that's not necessarily true. When you have a plan, you have a plan. You're still paying for it. But, you know, I didn't really have to pay a whole lot more for it than what I would have if I'd have bought the latest or the newest. I just went with the old one, and it works just fine for me.
And that's one of my banes. I'm the techno junkie of my household, so the latest, the greatest. I feel like I got to have it. But personal financial discipline. Exactly.
But I would think that, you know, when it comes to technology, that particular age group, that college age group, those are some of the people that are targeted in advertisements for technology and things like that. Don't you think, Randy?
Absolutely. They've still got the same things that we have, the house, the car. I mean, they may get a different model than I would, but that need is still there. And there are so many household things, starting a family, as you're aware, and the costs associated with that. All of those things have to be taken into account with the budget. And you got to sort out what is the want versus what is the need, and making sure that you're taking care of your obligations.
So what I hear both of you saying is, we need to learn to be responsible and good stewards of what's been entrusted to us. Hopefully that happens before college, but if not, at least during college, so that if we incur student debt, that it doesn't turn into a crisis when we're in our early years of our first career.
And you know, we've had a lot of negatives in this discussion, I grant that, but the encouraging thing I would put out there is there is a way. You just need to work on what that way is, reach out, go to the different counselors, go to people that can help you figure out what the plan is.
One thing I want to point out that Randy mentioned earlier, when in terms of planning for children, for know, you mentioned, you know, parents, Randy, you mentioned that parents come to you when their kids are in high school saying, what can we do? How can we pay for college? And you mentioned at that point, it's kind of late, not impossible, but kind of late if you start early when they're young. And I have to say, one of the things that we've been most pleased with LCEF is the rollout of the new Young Investors Club that's been out a year now, and our son is a year old. He was one of the first investors in Young Investors Club, and we're very grateful for that. And, you know, he only needs so many toys. He can only use so many toys. So when family members ask us, you know, or if they ask us what he can use, we always point out, well, he does have an investment account. You know, he's a young investor with LCEF. He can always put away money for college.
LCEF has worked very hard to try to maintain a relevance. My first recollection of LCEF was the stamp program. Mm-hmm. The YI is today's stamp program. It's today's generation, and it's a magnificent product designed to foster good stewardship and defer those things, that the toys that are laying all over the floor, have them contribute to that account that's building something for your son or daughter's future.
And I think he would appreciate, as much as he appreciates toys now, he's got plenty of toys. He has plenty of toys. I think he would certainly appreciate down the road the support for college and reducing his chances of student debt as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
He doesn't want to be in that 50% that regret
right.
that they have student loans.
Now, it might take him a while to learn to appreciate that.
Actually, I will tell you, it won't take him long after he comes out of school. Both of my boys, we were, again, fortunate to help finance them, and they have appreciated it immensely. It's just made such a difference in what they were able to do coming out of school.
And then that impacts life when you can graduate from college without that student debt. That impacts a whole big picture of things. It impacts how you're able to serve. It impacts lifestyle and family relationships, all those things. And I know, Larry, you've studied this and read about this and written about this quite a bit.
Yeah, more so recently. In recent years, dealing more directly with the rostered church workers and the impact on the ministry. And my advice to congregations is that we need to push that dialogue. Have congregations set up a nurture committee or a Christ care committee to work with their church workers. Mm-hmm. Let's have the conversation. Is there some kind of assistance that the church can, and we should.
Sure. And I know when it comes to church workers, even some districts also offer some support for students in helping them repay student loans as well. And it's great to hear. I know that there are some programs set up specifically for church workers across the district, and glad to see that support happening for church workers. And it's just encouraging to see that.
And it's something that the districts, the church is blessed to have those resources. Mm-hmm. Is it enough? It's not enough. But and nobody said it was going to be designed to take care of the need, but something to assist with the need.
Absolutely. Well, our time is winding down. I want to thank you both, gentlemen, for being my guest today and helping us address the topic of student debt. Our guest today, Larry Kroom, LCEF Vice President for National Lending. Larry, thanks so much for being my guest today on Faith and Family.
It's been my pleasure.
And Randy Boehm with Education Solution Partners. Randy, thanks so much for being our guest here on Faith and Family today.
You're very welcome. I really appreciate it.
Coming up in just a little bit, we've got Thy Strong Word right here on Listener Supported Worldwide, KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.